This is one of the most beautiful of the Psalms. The psalmist is confident that God knows him intimately, and therefore knows that the psalmist opposes those who oppose God's will. And we might compare Psalm 17, which reads, "From you let my vindication come. Let your eyes see the right. If you try my heart, if you visit me by night, if you test me, you will find no wickedness in me. My mouth does not transgress." And Psalm 26, "Vindicate me, Yahweh. I have walked in my integrity. I have trusted in Yahweh without wavering. Prove me, Yahweh, and try me. Test my heart and my mind." Our author seems to be drawing on Near Eastern poetic images which see the sun god as a god of justice, scrutinizing all mankind with impartiality. One of the names for the sun god was Shamash, and one was Utu, depending on what language you're talking in the Near East. However, the psalmist's accent, while it may draw on those images of the sun god, accents the transcendence. So the Jews always recognize that God is beyond all images and all creation. I'll just read you some of those ideas of the transcendence of God. "Oh, the depth of the riches and wisdom and knowledge of God," says Paul in Romans 11. "How unsearchable are God's judgments, how inscrutable God's ways." And in 1 Corinthians, Paul writes, "The Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God." And 1 John 1:5 says, "God is light. In God there is no darkness at all." The book of Revelations, finally, chapter 2, says, "I am the one who searches minds and hearts. I will give to each of you as your works deserve." So with that introduction, we'll move to this lovely Psalm 139. "Yahweh, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my journeying and my resting. You are acquainted with all my ways." In the Hebrew, the word "you" there, "you know when I sit down, you discern," is emphatic. It's not just a part of the verb. It's got the pronoun "you" right there in the front. It's accenting. You know when I sit down, you know this, as it does throughout this psalm. The idea of God's searching is picked up again towards the end of the psalm, which we'll see, and we might compare Isaiah 37, where God says, "I know you're rising up and you're sitting down, you're going out and you're coming in." So God is intimately aware of us, each of us.
In those
verses, yes. Verse 4, "Even before a word is on my tongue, Yahweh, you know it completely." And we might be reminded of Sirach 42. It says, "The Lord, the Almighty, searches out the abyss and the human heart. He understands their innermost secrets. For the Most High knows all that may be known, sees from of old the things that are to come. He discloses what has been and what is to be, and reveals the traces of hidden things. No thought escapes him. Nothing is hidden from the Lord the Almighty." Psalm, "You hem me in behind and before. you lay your hand upon me. And St. Augustine, in commenting on that verse, thinks of God's hand which is laid on Moses, and quotes Exodus 33, which we'll quote too, which reads, "While my glory passes by," says God to Moses, who asked to see God's face, he says, "All right, come here, stand in the cleft of the rock, and while my glory passes by, I'll put you in the cleft of the rock, and I'll cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen." In other words, you'll see how to go. You'll see what way to follow to come to God. That's the Torah. That's what the Torah is. The Torah doesn't show us God's face, as the Jews saw it, but the Torah shows us the way to live looking at God's back and following God's will and entering into God's glory. So quite a simple and quite beautiful image. Well, back to our psalm. "You hem me in behind and before. You lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's so high, I cannot attain it." Sirach says in chapter 24, "The first man did not know wisdom fully, nor will the last one fathom her." It's beyond all human investigation. And Judges 13, "The angel of Yahweh said to Manoah," that's the father of Moses, "Why do you ask my name? It is too wonderful. You can't name me." Now, without any interruption, we'll just go through the psalm from verse 7 to verse 12. "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and settle at the farthest limits of the sea, even there your left hand shall lead me and your right hand hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will cover me and the light around me become night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day. Darkness is as light to you." Similar images we find in the ancient prophecy of Amos. Maybe that's where our author got it from. Chapter 9, which reads, "Though they dig into Sheol, from there shall my hand take them. Though they climb up to heaven, from there I will bring them down. Though they hide themselves on the top of Carmel, from there I will search out and take them. And though they hide from my sight at the bottom of the sea, there I will command the sea serpent, and it shall bite them." So you can't escape from God's judgment. And Jeremiah 23 reads, "Am I a God nearby, says Yahweh? Am I not a God far off? Who can hide in secret places so that I cannot see them, says Yahweh? Do I not fill heaven and earth?" So verse 13, our psalmist continues, "It was you who formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. You know me very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth." Isaiah 26, like a woman with child who writhes and cries out in her pangs when she is near her time, so were we because of you, Yahweh. We were with child, we writhe, but we gave birth only to wind. See, they never gave real birth. They thought they were pregnant with life, but we failed God. We just produced wind. It was a psychological kind of pregnancy, but not a real one. We gave birth only to wind. We've won no victories on earth. No one is born to inhabit the world. Your dead shall live, their corpses shall rise. O dwellers in the dust, awake and sing for joy, for your dew is a radiant dew, and the earth will give birth to those long dead. In spite of our failure, our Jews' failure to do it, God will still bring life even to the dead. But we have failed in our mission, is what Isaiah is saying. Verse 16. Your eyes beheld me as a fetus, a little child in the womb. I'm just commenting on that, perhaps, or looking at other images. Second Maccabees, the mother of the seven sons of the Maccabees, says, I do not know how you came into being in my womb. It was not I who gave you life and breath, nor I who set in order the elements within each of you. Wondering, as we still wonder, at the absolute miracle of how any child is born is incredible. That we have children born, some defects, is when you think of all the processes and everything that can go wrong all along the way, it's just such a miracle, isn't it? Intricate miracle of birth. Well, there's the mother saying, I don't know how it all happened. Someone bigger than me, Dada, did all this. Job 10 reads, did you not pour me out like milk and curdle me like cheese? You clothed me with skin and flesh and knit me together with bones and sinews. A poetic reflection. And Wisdom 7 says, in the womb of a mother I was moulded into flesh. Within the period of 10 months, compacted with blood from the seed of a man and the pleasure of marriage. So, our psalm, your eyes beheld me as a fetus. In your book were written all the days that were prepared for me before any of them existed. The Old Testament speaks of a register of what we've done, but nowhere else of a book in which our destiny is written beforehand. This is the only time you find this in the whole Bible. Don't know how significant that is, but to talk about God having a book prepared with all our life planned out, you don't find that anywhere else than in Psalm 139, verse 16. Psalm 56 reads, you have kept count of my ups and downs, put my tears in your bottle. Are they not in your record? Bottle or gourd. The courts sat in judgment, this is, and the books were opened. That's Daniel, the beautiful image of the Son of Man appearing in the, and then the, these are the assizes, and this is the book of good deeds and bad deeds, which we know about. Verse 17. How weighty to me are your thoughts, O God? How vast is the sum of them? I try to count them. They're more than the sand. I come to an end, and I'm still with you. Some nice phrases in this, aren't there? Sirach reads, who can search out his mighty deeds? When human beings are finished, they're just beginning. And when they stop, they're still perplexed. They're still pondering. We knew a lot more as teenagers than we do now, didn't we? And Sirach again says, let the final word be, he is the all. God. And Job 11 reads, can you find out the deep things of God? Can you find out the limit of the Almighty? It's higher than heaven. What can you do? It's deeper than Sheol. What can you know? Its measure is longer than the earth and broader than the sea. If he passes through and imprisons and assembles for judgment, who can hinder him? The psalmist goes on with an understandable feeling, but perhaps not from the most generous part of his soul. He says, "Oh, that you would kill the wicked, O God, and that the bloodthirsty would depart from me, those who speak of you maliciously and rise up against you for evil." And I'm sure many of us looking back on it, that time when they tried to assassinate Hitler, and just the leg of the bloomin' table. It's hard to think that, to pray that psalm. It's childish, I know, but you'd say, "God, why didn't he get killed? Would have saved hell," because that was the beginning of the worst part of the anti-Jewish stuff and Auschwitz and the dreadful business. And had he been killed? But in our silly little times, we think God's going to arrange the chairs to organise it. But do you know what I mean? We can feel like that sometimes, can't we? We'd like someone out of our life and, we don't want to murder them, but we wouldn't mind if the bus ran over them so that we got rid of them. And you might never feel like this. But many of us do. And that's the psalm that reminds us we're dealing with human feelings here. Psalm 26, "I do not sit with the worthless. I don't consort with hypocrites," says the psalmist. "I hate the company of evildoers. I won't sit with the wicked. Don't sweep me away with sinners, nor my life with the bloodthirsty, those in whose hands are evil devices and whose right hands are full of bribes." So the city's under attack, people are being killed, and he's saying, "Look, I'm innocent, don't sweep me away with them." But the innocent do get swept away, so the mentality isn't that helpful, really. "Do I not hate those who hate you, Yahweh? Do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them my enemies," your enemies, my enemies. "Search me, O God, know my heart, test me, know my thoughts, see if there's any wicked way in me, and lead me along the everlasting way." So he wants to be good, thinks he is being good, and probably is being, and asks God to find out anything that's not good, fix it up, and lead me along this way to do your will.